How much space does it take to house the federal government? No one quite knows, but the government, including the Defense Department, has a real estate portfolio of something like 273,000 buildings. You may be stuffed into a tiny cubicle, but down the street, a federal building might stand vacant. That's one reason federal real estate made the Government Accountability Office's high-risk list this year. Here in studio with some important trends in federal real estate, Joe Brennan, Director of Government Investor Services, and Lucy Kitchen, Senior Vice President at the real estate firm JLL. Good to have you both in.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
One of the things that the GAO complains about with the federal government is that it leases too much space versus owns building. I thought leasing was a way to control costs and perhaps a way to be more flexible and agile in your requirements than owning a building. So what is the issue with leasing versus owning in the public sector?
Sure. And there are challenges with both with ownership. I mean, when you own real estate, you actually have to maintain it, and you have to and then you own it forever. When you lease space, you get flexibility. You get the ability to grow, to shrink, to upgrade your space, to have, frankly, somebody else run it for you. The government is very well suited to lease space and flourishes in that environment. I also believe that the government struggles as an owner.
We can get to that, but let's continue with leases. Mm-hmm. Are there metrics for the long-term, say, 10-year, 50-year, 100-year life cycle costs of occupying space, leasing versus owning, that they could use to calculate these things?
Well, I think there are two things. Leasing is simply you can ebb and flow in the market. The largest tenant in the marketplace in the country is the federal government. They control a very big stick in their ability to be a buyer in lease space. And if they produce leases that are financeable, which was what drives the real estate market, they can command incredibly flexible and great deals for the taxpayer.
And Lucy, I mean, given the fact that the federal government is basically operating on a cash accounting basis, does it really matter whether they own a building financially in the long term?
I think you're going to have some people in the Office of Management and Budget that are going to say, yes, we should always own buildings. But as Joe alluded to, they're an important sector of the health of our market. So what the government gets out of leasing is flexibility, which is what they want. And then you've got the upfront costs of moving into these federally owned buildings that are oftentimes antiquated, that require a lot of renovation. It sounds great in practice and it sounds great on the Hill, but you've got to allocate and appropriate a lot of money to get these buildings up to the modern standards and to bring leases back in. So even if it is a great idea in theory, it's not something that we're seeing executed well in practice. Washington, D.C., it's about a quarter of our market. Just so you understand, the owned and leased real estate is a quarter of the Washington, D.C. market. And that is the bread and butter of the health of our market. So leasing, we're big advocates.
Mm-hmm. It's good for your company, in other words, for the federal government to lease. We're speaking with Lucy Kitchen, Senior Vice President, and Joe Brennan, Director of Government Investor Services at the real estate firm JLL. Let's talk about a real-life case here. Mm-hmm. 15 years after it was formed, Homeland Security is scattered all over town.
Sure.
They've had this plan for at least 12 years now to move into the St. Elizabeth's site on the other side of the Anacostia River. Beautiful piece of land up there. The buildings continue to rot if it's possible to make use of the original building up there. What should be a strategy for consolidating Homeland Security? Build, lease back, build and own, just keep on leasing all over the place?
I think to answer that question, we have to start at how it happened. And as I mentioned earlier, we're in an event-driven market. So in 2003, Department of Homeland Security was created in response to September 11th. And what happens when you have something that drives the mission, you got to get out there and respond to the public. Government real estate is actually typically reactive. So what we did in 2003 was take all the space we could get, whether it was in Virginia or Washington, D.C. on Nebraska Avenue. And we just leased as much space as possible to respond to the mission that was given to the Department of Homeland Security. So it starts out very reactive. And then as we go along, as you alluded to, Tom, what we try to do, what the government tries to do, is they say, okay, we need to be consolidated. We need to be together. We need to be coordinated. And so after that kind of ad hoc creation, then in moments of relative tranquility, they try to create a strategic plan. And that strategic plan has been to move to the St. Elizabeth's former Civil War hospital, former mental hospital in Anacostia. And that's just incredibly complicated because, like I alluded to earlier, the upfront costs sometimes aren't politically, they're not politically popular. So it's great in theory, but in practice, the business of the Department of Homeland Security has to go on, and it's increasingly important because of cyber. So I would say that the easiest way to think about it is government real estate consumption is typically reactive at first and then becomes a bit more strategic after.
But corporations pick up and move. Look at Boeing a few years back. Their headquarters moved from Seattle to Chicago. They built a building and moved, and then they were there. Nobody missed no beat was missed.
The challenge with the federal government is ownership is forever. And when they own these buildings, they never dispose of them, or very rarely dispose of them. That's sort of one element. And the other element is the government is funded annually as you push a budget forth. And what happens with these very high cost, single event efforts like St. Elizabeth's, you know, billions of dollars need to go into those facilities, and you need to find that money. Easier to find that money sort of annually than it is to find it in gigantic chunks.
Now, GAO cites some other examples like the Cotton Annex. Nice looking tower, small tower. I guess it's around, 1890 or something, whenever it was built. And a couple hundred thousand square feet, vacant for 10 years. And how does that happen?
And procured in 1890, and all of a sudden now we're just kind of getting around to selling it. Yes, that's a very difficult challenge to be able to do that. And the government has been a great acquirer of space and a very poor disposer of space. And the post office, the old post office is another great example of how long that took to evolve from what it was to what it is today.
Yeah, it was just sort of a few moths, some rats in a dead food court for a long time there.
Exactly.
All right, to summarize here, what are some of the commercial best practices that the government just doesn't seem to do for its real estate that maybe it could?
Joe and I have the exact same answer, I'm sure. I'm looking at him right now. It's long-term leases, because I know that we're trying to consolidate, we're trying to come up with a master plan, but in every case, the government, our taxpayers, are going to pay less in real estate and federally leased real estate if they can commit to a long term. It is what we call out there a buyer's market. Okay, so you've got a lot of vacancy in the outlying submarkets, which we refer to as the Southwest, Southeast, and NoMa north of Massachusetts Avenue. If the government can,
and Roslyn for that matter,
and Roslyn Boston corridor, if they can commit to a 15-year or even a 10-year firm term, then they are going to get great deals in terms of rental rate and concessions. What they've been doing, because of the specter of consolidation out there, is they've been only committing to short-term extensions, which garners a pretty significant premium. So they're paying a lot more for that flexibility and I'll let Joe opine on this as well, but when it comes time for that extension to expire, they just do another extension.
And then they're over a barrel, basically.
Yeah, I would suggest the real best practice is for the government to appreciate its position in the marketplace as either a buyer or a seller. They're a very muscular buyer when it's time to buy, and they're could be a very muscular seller when it's time to sell. Currently, as Lucy said, the interest rates are right, the vacancies are right. Be a muscular buyer, and frankly, as a buyer, the leasing market would support fabulous deals for the taxpayer. There are also opportunities to be a seller and dispose of property. I'm actually on my way to Capitol Hill to have a discussion with some folks about this right now. And if you can be a skilled seller to a market that has buyers that are out there, great opportunities.
Joe Brennan is Director of Government Investor Services, and Lucy Kitchen, Senior Vice President at the real estate firm JLL. Thanks so much for joining me.
We had a great time.
Great time. Thank you.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.